that we...
On we go.
Two of us.
Okay, I'll go and go.
Thank you.
But so I have discourse analysis this time. And discourse analysis is a term that's used to describe a number of approaches to analyze the use of language above the sentence level. And I guess that's where it probably differs from conversational analysis or linguistics, in that it goes above the sentence level. And in discourse analysis, when we talk of language, the language can be written or spoken. I have a definition of discourse analysis that I thought was useful. And it goes like this. It's the study of how sentences in spoken and written language form larger, meaningful units such as paragraphs, conversations, or interviews. So one thing about discourse analysis that sets it apart from linguistics is that linguistics originally was about the study of sentences, whereas what discourse analysis does is it goes above the sentences and tries to look at the context in which they are said or in which they are written. Another sort of easy definition of discourse analysis is that it's a discipline that studies the relationship between the form and function in communication. So what discourse analysis does is it doesn't necessarily just try to describe the linguistic phenomena, but it tries to look at the intentions and purposes that went into constructing these.
Not so interested in what the person's saying, but more how they're saying
how they're saying
what purpose it's serving in saying it, the way that they're saying it, what function it's serving.
Right, and I came across an interesting analogy here. It was like if someone throws you a ball, and what do you do with it? Do you throw it back, or do you pass it on to a person next to you, or do you drop the ball? And like, what tells you what to do in this situation? I mean, how many seconds do you spend in deciding what to do? And then discourse analysis, in a way, is like that, in that it tries to look at how people, let's say, communicate with one another and how they know when to talk or how much pause there should be, and sort of analyzing that sort of thing. The subject of discourse analysis sort of appears in the literature starting in the mid-60s, and it is once more a combination of a number of different branches of humanities. The four main branches that gave rise to discourse analysis were linguistics, psychology, anthropology, and sociology. And discourse analysis can actually be sort of boiled down to one key question. And the question is that what's the relationship between the addresser and the addressee's use of language? And what is the social context in which all this takes place? So that would be one question that you could sort of boil down discourse analysis to. Discourse analysis is concerned with both spoken and written text, and it is kind of different when you talk about spoken or written text. They have different sorts of rules, so you can have different ways of analyzing the spoken and the written word. One thing discourse analysis also does is it serves a descriptive purpose. It tries to take large pieces of text and tries to structure them into patterns. One example I came across was they were talking about school classrooms, and they found out that exchanges in the school classroom usually follow three moves. And three moves are the opening move or the initiation, then there is the answering move, and then there is the follow-up move. And most interactions in school classrooms would follow this sort of a three-step procedure. And going back to discourse analysis as a broad subject, discourse analysis is not really, you can't really call it a method by itself or a scientific method, because it does not provide specific answers. What it actually does is it tries to look at the motivations that are behind the text or behind a particular choice of communication, and it tries to interpret that. So every text is sort of conditioned based on its social context. And what discourse analysis does is it does not actually answer a specific question that you have, but what it does is it would make us realize, I mean, why someone chose to use that particular type of communication method. Discourse analysis is often perceived as a product of the postmodern period. And the reason for that is that the philosophies in the postmodern period are sort of I mean, there is no one set view in the postmodern period compared to other periods such as the Enlightenment or the Modernism. There is no one set structure in the postmodern world. And what the postmodern belief is that the world actually has no fixed objective meaning. It's inherently fragmented, and what is reality is sort of open to subjective interpretation. And the interpretation that we make of reality is conditioned by our social upbringing and the cultural context. So, which is why basically discourse analysis has come about in the postmodern period. So that was about it.
That was fantastic.
Thank you.
Very well done, very clear. I like that because it gives us the epistemology, the angles that we want to situate within. Discourse analysis, it's an interesting one. There's a huge book, thick book that came out recently, and it's got people like Deborah Cannon I've been referring to in it, who are very much the linguistic side of discourse analysis, much more in the way that you were describing it towards the beginning. Mm-hmm. You're what you were talking about. Then when you're getting more into the postmodern ideas about it, we could think of discourse analysis, which is situated more in psychology. And that's the one that I'm most familiar with and have worked on. And its roots are firmly planted in social constructionism. Okay. So this is where we get a change from our phenomenological we're working on now. Now, social constructionism couldn't have existed to some extent without its phenomenological roots, okay? Because there's still, it's still about meaning, and it's still about interpretation, and it's still about intentionality, okay? So we need those parts. But where it parts company is with the kind of situatedness of the subject, moves from subjectivity and the persons, or the individuals, to the idea that it's social. All knowledge, all things that we speak about are actually socially constituted. Okay, they're not situated within one individual. So language becomes the form in which all language and text, and we talked before about a discourse can be more than just talk and text too, and in its broader sense now, it gets conceptualized. It can be a picture, you know, it can be a... But at the end of the day, when we start to talk about it or describe it or write about it, it becomes talk or text. Okay? And that's the medium that we deal with. So I think it's getting those two sides. And what we'll do is, I think, we gradually try to take you on a journey here a little bit. So I've got you into phenomenology pretty heavy. We're going to do a kind of narrative analysis. We're going to work on this idea of themes and concepts this week on your little piece of analysis that I've given you. And then next week I'm going to get you to do what I consider to be a bridging piece of research, which is narrative analysis, which is narratology based research, and that's when you're going to do your life story or autobiographical or biographical research. Okay? Now they bridge the two, in my opinion, because they bridge phenomenology, and they're not completely social constructionism, because in fact a lot of people who went that way, myself included, into that radical discourse analysis or what we're calling discursive psychology, have backed up from it a little bit now and would want to do this more narrative approach. Because we got into this quandary of if everything's socially constructed, then how can we look at competing interpretations? Okay, in terms of being able to say something about a particular issue. And when you wanted to do that, you ran into trouble, as you know, with the postmodern framework for doing that. So some people have backed off a little bit, and there's been some good work on this, and we'll talk about it. I won't preempt it too much, but next week we'll get into that. And that's when you'll do your narratives, and we'll look at it. And then we'll do discourse analysis. So you'll get all three, but I took it as a journey, so you'd see that it started with this phenomenology. You'll see how narrative analysis is drawing on a little bit of both, and then where the real separation happens when we come to social constructionism as an epistemology for discourse analysis.
How do you spell narratology? Is it from narrative?
Is it narrative?
Narrative.
N-A-R. Double R.
Okay.
Yeah. But I like that. But so that's why I want to just clarify. You'll find both spectrums then. You'll find a really linguistic and even sociological aspect to discourse. In fact, it used to be the constructionism, the V, and that's the sociological take on social constructionism. They're not very different, but they're self-different, and they come from those different schools of thought, social and social psychology. Very confusing stuff.
And especially for business students, I mean, last term we actually did a course that had a lot of stuff on structuralism, social construction.
Yeah.
And I mean, the whole course was based on these ideas. And for most business students, when we were doing that initially, it was like, all that. And they said that reality is subjective and it cannot be measured.
Yeah, well, geez. when my profits go up or down, that's not very subjective to me. I can understand that.
Yeah, and the thing was, the professor who was teaching that, he's also from the business faculty. And what is very different about him is, he was telling us that, I mean, he has been a professor for about 10-15 years, and he was telling us he has never actually done any paper using quantitative methods.
Mm-hmm.
So every paper he has written has used qualitative methods. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the only professor I know in the business faculty.
Yeah, but it's growing. They are the minority still.
Mm-hmm.
But it's people, and you yourself included, you know, becoming interested already in it. Will continue to make it grow, and it could well be that it's outgrowing the questions that people want to ask in business have, you know, grown beyond the methods available to ask them, and therefore they start to look for new ways to approach it. But it's really good you have him, I think, for coming into this class probably, because you know, otherwise all these, you know, new things would be.
Yeah, it made us a little less afraid.
Yeah, of these isms and ologies.
You wouldn't be here without that, right?
Probably not.
Yeah, well, we're glad you're here.
Yeah.
It really is nice to have another another angle.
Can I ask a question?
Yes. Yeah.
Difference between discourse analysis and conversation analysis, then, if you had to kind of characterize it, what's essentially the difference?
Okay. Good question. Discourse analysis doesn't necessarily focus on the turn taken.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Although context is important, it may not be at that level that context is being focused on. So it may be a different level of context it's considering, like the institutionalization of what was being talked about, the institution surrounding what was being talked about, or the immediate social setting, rather than that intricate turn-taking of, you know, conversation.
So is discourse analysis looking at more like its structures and things like that? Is it taking anything from structuralism at all, or I'm just trying to...
Yeah, it's...
I think it's taking a lot from social construction, that meaning is constructed based on cultural context.
It's trying to get at what meanings are being generated, are being put forward in any given text or any given unit of text.
Does it relate to?
Doesn't have to be conversation.
Yeah.
Any
discussion.
That's why I said it could be, you know, pictorial.
So you could use
could be then
now.
Used in, to look at
literature
meanings that come through pictures. So
yeah.
Literature. Absolutely.
Okay. I read a term. Costuming used in a dance with a visual discourse.
Anything where meaning is generated. So you could do discourse analysis. Remember the music, the very first week. That was a step. You know, the data that was produced from our stream of consciousness writing after we saw the video. We weren't here, but we saw a performer sing a piece of music on video. And we all then just did a stream of consciousness writing of what we saw for lots of reasons. One is to see how different we all perceive. But the other was the idea that then becomes data that you could then subject to a discourse analysis to look at the actual meaning that came across. And so you would be then pulling out many of the things that we did, like, you know, the imagery that people had picked up on in different ways. What people were attending to, and the functions that would be then serving in in some context, okay? Like, for example, if I was interested in the group and dynamics of this class, I could look at the functions that you're different, what you attended to in the film, and the way you talked about that, on your knowing that you would share it, or not knowing it, let's say you knew you would share it, I don't know if I made that clear or not, might then influence, might have something to do with the functionality behind the way you wrote up certain things. So I'll give you an example. You know, there may have been certain thoughts that would have gone into on, certain that you might have thought about in relation to it, maybe even, let's take sexual thoughts. But you didn't want to write those down, given that the context you're writing for was this class, and the sharing of it would have been in this class, and that might not be appropriate. So we would, so it would be going at the interpretive levels that look at functionality, the function of the text, as well as what the meanings generated from the text. Okay. Lots of different levels.
Would you say that conversation analysis looks more at the intention of the speakers, or not necessarily?
It's more interested in that. Yeah, that definitely, that just that immediate social taking interaction of that. Of that time. Okay. It's at a much, I always consider it to be ultimately much more micro level of analysis than I see discourse now. But there are two, for the moment, splits of discourse analysis in psychology that happened in the UK. There was the Potter and Weatherall, who kind of really coined the discourse analysis in psychology by their book in 1987, I believe, called something like Discourse Analysis. they were the ones that did it that way. And then there was the Edwards camp, who doesn't do it so much in this book, but who came along with some more, like I say, Michael Billig approach to discourse analysis, which is more about representations. Subject positions, which I think you mentioned, position in theory, and that became different. So there is a splintering, and both sides believe they are the only ones who should be able to call it discourse analysis. So to avoid all that, in my work, I've taken to calling it discursive psychology or discursive analysis, purely to avoid having to situate myself in one camp or the other. So just so you know, it's never straightforward. Everybody wants a piece of the pie. Right? Want their name in a book. It's my turn. So that's why it's complicated. But we'll have a really, there's a great book, Introduction to Social Constructionism by Vivian Burr. If you ever, it's just a little book, and it's so good, it's so clear. If you ever get a chance to.
V-U-R-R?
Yep, Vivian Burr. And Introduction to Social Constructionism. And it's got discourse analysis. All it links the two really nicely, and it even shows you clear examples of research that would use that approach and why and what it's doing. And if you read that book, you'll immediately have the aha experience of why it's different but similar to phenomenology. You'll get enough of a feel of where these are parting company. Remember too, phenomenology is much more rooted to the symbolic interactionism movement. That was very American, very, very American. Okay, that did not take off in Europe at all. So you can see why splintering happened, you know, because the Europeans took the branch of social constructionism on board and created a discursive analysis that differed from symbolic interactionism, which was the Chicago school. Here was the George Meade and what was in that? Cooley. Mm-hmm. So that's why you get these fragments too. They're culturally situated. Okay. Next.
Okay.
And last but not least. So next week we'll have Steve though give us feminist research and Marty the repertory group. Okay. Fiona?